Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. Stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you back on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. We look back on the week that was, we look forward to the week to come, and where should we start today? There's so much in the news. We could start with Justin Bieber, paternity suit there, or possibly Israel gearing up to strike Iranian nuclear sites. It's all just so much fluff. Wait a minute. We have the Kardashian divorce? Or the possible NATO invasion of Syria? It's all just tabloid stuff. Actually, I don't know if we're going to do any of those stories. No, I noticed that Justin Bieber's a lefty, though. Did you notice that? I saw him playing his guitar. Left-handed.
Not that special.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. My extremely attractive audio engineer has a theory that there's more left-handed people now because society has become, less insistent that one be right-handed. And so we're bound to see an increase in devious left-handed people. You know Barry Ho's left-handed. You got Barry Ho and Justin Bieber are both left-handed, so that doesn't bode well for lefties. Although I was a little disappointed that Bieber didn't come out and say it was impossible for him to have fathered that child, him being a virgin and all. That was rather disappointing. Although, it's hard for Justin Bieber to disappoint me because, I just don't care. let's start with serious news. Since I don't have anything interesting that happened in my life this week that I can think of, let me scan the banks, the memory banks here. No, not a thing. Not a thing interesting happened at the McBurney compound. All was relatively quiet and peaceful. So let's just open up with Nancy Pelosi. Let's open up on Nancy Pelosi. I got a story here from the Washington Examiner by Katie Adams, who's a staff writer there. And she says, on Wednesday, we wrote an item speculating about whether House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi might have had some work done. Now, we know what that means these days, right? Had some work done. It doesn't mean she was remodeling the kitchen. No, she was remodeling the jowl area of her face, possibly. Well, an area plastic surgeon, according to Katie over at the Washington Examiner, an area plastic surgeon chimed in saying that, in his opinion, it appeared as if that might be likely. Nancy may indeed have had some work done. Now, the reporter says she reached out to the Pelosi camp asking for a comment. And while she didn't hear back from them by deadline, Nancy Pelosi's press secretary, Drew Hamill, did respond on Tuesday evening with the following message. Quote, Katie, you are a disgrace to journalism. Unquote. Just for asking about Nancy's plastic surgery. I'm not going to post these pictures up on the site, but having some expertise in this area, I mean, I can spot a facelift from across the room, so you can't slip too many past me. And Nancy's definitely had some nippage and tuckage going on there, but it's not really helping. You've heard the old phrase, you can't make a silk purse from a cow. Oh, how does it go? Did I say a cow? I did not mean that. You can't make a silk purse from a sow's ear, is the old saying. So, no matter how good Nancy Pelosi's plastic surgeon is, he is limited by the laws of physics and, you know, the quality of the material that he had to work with. And Nancy Pelosi, one of the ugliest women inside and out who has ever walked up and down upon the face of the earth alongside Satan. Anyway, so the rumors will abound this week, but you can take it to the bank from someone who has some expertise that She's been getting a little reconstruction done. All right, now, let's move on to the politics file. Well, that was the politics file. We're still in the politics file. We delve even deeper. From CNN.com, CNN reports that President Barack Obama passed his recent physical in excellent condition. Obama was found to be, quote, tobacco-free, unquote. So Barry Ho is tobacco-free. And I've been wondering why all the anger and all the hollering in his speeches. I mean, he just seems really wound up and high-strung. And perhaps it comes down to the fact that he hasn't been able to have a stogie in a while, and he's just a little bit on edge. And perhaps this is the key to the mystery surrounding the Herman Cain ad with the guy smoking at the end. You've all seen the ad, right? With, his campaign manager exhaling tobacco smoke at the end. And everybody's wondered, why would Herman put that ad out there? Smoking being the equivalent of mass murder these days in the eyes of the media. Why would he put a guy smoking at the end of the ad? And I'm just thinking maybe it's kind of an in-your-face thing against Barry. Hey, Barry, not only are we going to win the White House, but we're going to keep smoking while you get all stressed out trying to destroy the country without the relief of a little bit of nicotine at the end of the day. We're just going to smoke it up and put Herman Cain in the White House. We'll get back to Herman later, maybe, possibly. Yeah, we might get back to Herman later. But for now, let's talk about some Democrat politicians. This is a story from TheHill.com, which is an Inside the Beltway publication. Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Democrat from Connecticut, has introduced legislation that would allow federal block grants that states now use to subsidize child care services to also allow for the purchase of diapers. State-owned diapers. They're gonna subsidize diapers. That's a real bummer because our littlest is now, what, 2.5? And she's almost off the diapers. So we don't get any free diapers. She's going to be off the diapers before we get any of the subsidized diapers. And we feel like we've been robbed in that we've had to pay full retail for all of our diapers.
Hey, wait a minute. Needed.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Hopefully we will need some more diapers. Have I ever explained to the audience my theory of having 5 children? You need to have 5 children, ladies and gentlemen. And here's my theory as to why. Because one of them is probably going to end up in jail or some other type of derelict out there camping in Civic Center Park or Zuccotti Park. It'd just be a loser. Okay? And now 2 of them will probably end up married with children and working and struggling just to try to stay ahead, just to try to keep their own heads above water. And so they won't be in any position to help you when you get old. And then one of them will probably become a self-absorbed person, so obsessed with themselves that they won't even call on holidays. And one of them, if you do the odds, one of them will end up making enough money to put you in a decent home when you're old. So that's why you need to have 5, folks. You got to play the odds so that you don't end up old and lonely changing your own diapers, government subsidized or otherwise. But let's get back to the story from The Hill. The bill introduced by Richard Blumenthal, Democrat from Connecticut, would amend the Child Care and Development Block Grant Act of 1990. That's really sad that we have that. A Child Care Block Grant Act, the government doling out money to feed, clothe, and shelter children. It's despicable. It's no wonder we're going broke, and it's no wonder that the traditional American family is on the verge of extinction, what with the government handing out block grants for child care since 1990. And that's just the latest iteration. Probably passed under not George W. Bush. Who was the elder Bush? George H.W., a Republican. Under current law, ladies and gentlemen, the money involved in this Block Grant Act for child care, is meant to subsidize child care services. Under the law, 4% of all funds must be used to improve the quality of child care. The federal program received approximately $5 billion in money stolen from productive members of society, and that's just in fiscal 2011. The program also received an extra $2 billion under the 2009 stimulus bill passed by, the aforementioned Nancy Pelosi. So $2 billion under the stimulus bill for child care, food, housing, clothing, now diapers for the little ones. $2 billion, yeah. 10% of which may or may not have gone to either the DNC or the Rahm Emanuel campaign back there in the state of Illinois. We don't have all the details on where that money went, but it may or may not have gone to those sources, ladies and gentlemen. All right, now, let's see, do we want to talk about Osama bin Laden? Well, let's just bring this up for the sake of discussion. There's a new book out, according to, this is from Fox News in L.A., a new book based on a series of interviews with the Navy SEALs involved in the mission to kill Osama bin Laden, claims to directly contradict the Barry Ho administration's depiction of said operation. This according to the Washington Examiner. The title of the book, if you want to pre-order on Amazon, is SEAL Target Geronimo, The Inside Story of the Mission to Kill Osama bin Laden. It's by former SEAL Commander Chuck Ferrer, and it claims to tell the true story of the successful raid to kill Osama bin Laden back in May. The book takes issue with the Obama administration's characterization of the mission. A press release noting the release of the book stated thusly, in a hasty effort to claim victory and make political haste, administration aides changed their stories several times. Their leaks made SEAL Team 6 look ineffective and clumsy. The book claims the SEALs landed on the roof of bin Laden's compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan, rather than on the ground, as the administration has stated. Ferrer also writes that it was within 90 seconds of the beginning of the raid that bin Laden was killed, not after an extended firefight. And the book, in all its gory details, will be released on November 8th. So there's a reference here to SEAL Team 6, and I remember when the story broke, many a commentator observed that there appears to be no such thing as SEAL Team 6. And there was some confusion in the conservative media about whether or not Barry Ho was making up this whole SEAL Team 6. What is this about SEAL Team 6? Well, let me give you my theory on what SEAL Team 6 is. Back when I was in the service, I had the opportunity to, eat in the same chow hall as some special forces guys and to drink in some of the same bars as Navy SEALs. And from what I understood, ladies and gentlemen, a six mission was simply a code for a mission to kill a particular target, 6 feet under. So SEAL Team 6 is any SEAL team that is assigned to hunt down and kill a particular enemy combatant. And that's why SEAL Team 6 doesn't really exist per se, but there are many SEAL Team 6 missions. It's like the mission that was declared against me one night at an E-Club on an Air Force base over in Japan. I unfortunately and in ignorance gave a ride home to a girlfriend of a Navy SEAL after she had had a spat with him. Took her home, dropped her off, returned to the E-Club to continue my mission. And the Navy SEAL basically chased me from the building, jumped on the back of my car, and kicked the back window out. accused me of stealing his girlfriend. I said, look, man, I think you've been drinking too much. I dropped her off, and I came back here within an hour. The MPs surrounded the vehicle, glass everywhere. I'm terrified, thinking I'm probably going to die right here, right now. There's five or six Navy SEALs, the one with his shirt off, bottle in his hand, raging, he's going to kill me. Anyway, the MPs calmed the guy down. I told him, look, I didn't steal your girlfriend anyway. She's pretty ugly. No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that to the Navy SEAL. And the MPs asked me, they said, do you want us to take him in? Because this guy's been in a lot of trouble. This will probably be the end for him. This will be it. And he'll go to the brig and he'll never get out. He'll be kicked out of the Navy. And I said, well, you know what? If he'll just pay for the window, we'll let it slide. And this Navy SEAL, in fine fashion, was true to his word, and he paid to put the window back in my Honda that he had kicked out. Don't know what happened to the girlfriend. I never followed up on that. So that's my brush with SEAL Team 6 on Kadena Air Base, circa 1989-ish. All right. Yeah, something like that. All right, so now I got distracted there. What was I talking about? Okay. Well, let's move on into the politics file. This is a funny one, and one that's interesting and intriguing to me, so I'm going to include it, despite the fact that many people close to me have dismissed this whole episode regarding the birthplace of one Barry Ho. Sheriff Joe Arpaio, according to WorldNet Daily, came up with an idea to demand the original microfilm of Barry Ho's birth certificate after he saw evidence from his cold case posse down in Maricopa County that the White House apparently released to the public three different versions of his long-form birth certificate. Show me the microfiche, not the copies the White House released, Sheriff Joe has said. WorldNet Daily reported that in 1966, the Hawaii Department of Health provided microfilm copies to Mrs. Eleanor Nordyke of the birth certificates of her twins, who were born the day after Obama in the very same hospital there in Hawaii. Sheriff Joe Arpaio said, quote, Obama's birth certificate is either on that microfilm roll along with the Nordyke twins' birth certificate, or it is not. And, well, this just sounds like a way to clear this whole thing up, because the microfilm should be there. And they had a cute picture of Eleanor Nordyke holding up the microfilm copies of her daughter's birth certificate. And, well, perhaps Sheriff Joe Arpaio will finally get to the bottom of this, because as everyone in America knows or senses innately, no matter where Barry Ho was born or not, he's just not one of us. Mother, turn that down. All right. So that's the silly. I opened up with a lot of silly news. Was it all silly? I'll go back through that. Barry's birth certificate. That's pretty silly. The Bin Laden raid. Yeah, well, we'll see about that. Federal funding for diapers. Yeah, no smoking for Barry. Pelosi and her facelift. Yeah. A lot of news that's really not that important. But I only started that way just to warm myself up, get my pipes lubed up here, and be able to deliver the news of the day to you, the news of the week even. And now I want to go to serious news, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to delve into the personhood file. We're going to go to WorldNet Daily, our trusted source for personhood news. WorldNet Daily reports that a dozen nurses have filed a lawsuit against a hospital run by the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey over a plan that would coerce them to help kill babies. I said it was a hospital, and these are nurses, and they're going to be coerced into killing babies. You know, I'm making a vow right now. As best I can, I will try to never use the word abortion again, because I think it muddies the waters. You know, because you can abort a landing if you're a pilot, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But killing babies is bad, and coercing nurses to participate at a hospital is it's bizarre. We had an incident at our church this morning. It was a very surreal incident because I forget if it was our pastor or one of the elders who announced the news that a certain hospital had been purchased by, I believe, a Catholic outfit, and they had decided that that hospital would stop killing babies. And everyone in the church applauded. I mean, it wasn't raucous applause or a standing ovation, but we applauded. And as we were applauding, all I could think is, we're applauding that a hospital has decided not to kill babies. What planet am I on? What dimension am I in? Shouldn't hospitals be about healing and helping and bringing babies into the world? And here we are applauding that a hospital has decided to discontinue the practice of butchering children. It just struck me as surreal, as I said. Now, back to this story from New Jersey. These dozen nurses have asked that the hospital also be told to return some $60 million to the federal government because federal law prohibits hospitals that receive certain types of federal funds from forcing workers to help with abortions. Yeah. Matt Bowman, who's the legal counsel for the Organization of Nurses, said, quote, pro-life nurses shouldn't be forced to assist in abortions against their beliefs. He says that's flatly illegal. And that's excellent that he pointed out that it's illegal, but it's also immoral and corrosive to the soul of the nation and to the souls of the women and men who participate in the killing of babies. Let's see, Matt Bowman is legal counsel working with the Alliance Defense Fund, and they have documented that it was in September when the hospital began a policy change and informed staff members that they would have to help with abortions. But it did offer an alternative. They could be fired if they didn't. So they did leave an escape hatch. You could lose your job if you didn't help kill babies. One nurse objected to helping kill children on the grounds of her religious beliefs, but a supervisor responded that the hospital has, quote, no regard for religious beliefs, unquote. That's kind of scary that a hospital has no regard for religious beliefs, especially religious beliefs that might persuade hospital administrators to not kill babies. Anyway, the nurses began their training back in October, which involved in the surgical killing of innocent children. We'll hope that the ADF is able to, at least help these 12 nurses who would rather not kill people. Nurses generally being associated with helping and healing people, these particular nurses find it distasteful to have to kill babies. Let's see, we have more news from the Personhood Front. This is from Germantown, Maryland. Report from WorldNet Daily. It was Halloween, and pro-life singles and families were praying outside the Germantown, Maryland baby-killing business of Leroy Carhart when two of his staffers handed the little children bags of Halloween treats. Inside the bags were condoms, among other things that I simply won't mention for the sake of not wanting to make anyone ill. But back to WorldNet Daily. Before opening his own late-term abortion shop of horrors, Carhart worked for the late partial birth abortionist George Tiller out in Wichita, Kansas, who was gunned down in his church. In 2007, the Supreme Court upheld the federal ban, on partial birth abortion in the Gonzalez versus Carhart case. But Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote the court's opinion and instructed abortionists on how to get around the ban using Carhart's preferred method of injecting poison into the hearts of late-term unborn babies. So as has been well documented, the the ban on partial birth abortion. Within the very ban itself was a paragraph on how doctors could get around it, which they're doing, following abortionist Carhartt's lead, using his technique of injecting poison into the hearts of little children in order to kill them. So anyway, it was the 40 Days for Life there in Germantown, Maryland. You've got Christians outside praying, and the staff of the abortion clinic is handing children condoms. Which side are you on, ladies and gentlemen? Because where you come down on a story like this probably has a lot to do with the destiny of your eternal soul, indeed. Okay. Now, more from the personhood front. Ladies and gentlemen, personhood has finally made the big time. Matt Drudge condescended to put a headline on the Drudge Report regarding the upcoming vote in Mississippi, which is this coming Tuesday. If you haven't made a donation to either Personhood Mississippi or Personhood USA, you'll want to do that as soon as possible so that the forces of good can counter the ads and the misinformation being spread by the forces of evil and darkness, the baby killers in Mississippi. But made the big time. Matt Drudge finally talked about it. It was weird. I was watching an interview with Haley Barbour on Fox News, which is the alleged conservative station. And at one segment they said, "Okay, Haley, we want to talk about the initiatives that'll be on the ballot," and they brought up initiatives about, well, I can't really remember what. I think there was an eminent domain initiative that Haley Barbour was more than happy to speak about, but both the interviewer and the governor assiduously avoided discussing the personhood amendment that's also on the ballot there in Mississippi. So I figured it's a news blackout, as is typically the case. That's the strategy of the forces of darkness, is to simply ignore the issue. But the next day, Matt Drudge had this article from the Washington Post. Again, I said, personhood has made the big time. Even the old legacy media that's going bankrupt is now condescending to mention the fact that there will be a vote to criminalize the killing of children in the state of Mississippi. And here's what the Washington Post had to say. They said an anti-abortion movement that is gaining momentum nationwide is hoping for its first electoral victory Tuesday, when Mississippi voters will decide whether to designate a fertilized egg as a person and potentially label its destruction as an act of murder. Okay, now just a couple of corrections, editorial corrections for my good friends at the Washington Post. First of all, there's no such thing as a fertilized egg. Oh, wait a second. Let me read down here in the article. They have a quote here from Walter Hoy, who's a California pastor and president of the Issues for Life Foundation and former co-sponsor of the Personhood Initiative in California. Walter Hoy says, quote, "Calling it a fertilized egg is dehumanizing. It's an embryo," unquote. Okay, well, thank you, Walter. I don't have to correct the Washington Post on that note. I do appreciate your input, Walter. And I've got to say, I appreciate the Washington Post for actually printing Walter Hoy's comments. Yes, indeed. But let me correct you here. It says that voters will decide whether to designate a fertilized egg as a person and potentially label its destruction as an act of murder. You can leave out the word potentially there at the Washington Post, because the forces of goodness and light in the personhood movement don't want to potentially label child killing as murder. They want to actually label child killing as murder. So let me just scratch out potentially. That reads much, much better. The Personhood Initiative, according to the Washington Post, would give a jolt of energy to a national movement that views mainstream anti-abortion activists as timid and complacent. And I would also say counterproductive, passing laws that codify the murder of children, the murder of some children, while attempting to regulate the killing of other children. Yes, very counterproductive to the movement. But back to the Washington Post article. Proponents of the amendment who were inspired partly by the Tea Party movement, say they are confident of a victory in Mississippi. And indeed, the polling looks good. If it doesn't win, it's at least going to make a showing that will frighten the baby killers. But let me just make another editorial correction here. The Tea Party, as best I can tell, either started in 2008 with TARP, or it started in 2009 with the election of our first communist president, Barry Ho. I was working on personhood in Colorado along with Colorado Right to Life, who launched the current personhood movement right here in Colorado back in 2007. So we were not inspired partly by the Tea Party movement. We were entirely inspired by the spirit of the living God that dwells upon the earth bodily within us. That's who inspired us, you communist, filthy scum reporters at the Washington Post, who should all be working at McDonald's or maybe as a barista at Starbucks at best. What else does the Post article have here? Opponents of the measure include Planned Parenthood and the American Civil Liberties Union. Which side are you on in that battle? Are you on the side of the people who want to stop the killing of innocent people? Or are you with Planned Parenthood and the American Civil Liberties Union? Again, the answer to that question will have a lot to do with the final destination of your eternal soul. Let's see, anything else from this article? Oh, many legal experts, according to the Post, say that the Mississippi measure probably would not stand up in court. I say, let's find out. Bring it on. Let's take it to court and see what stands up and what doesn't. Let's see how uncomfortable we can make the ACLU and Planned Parenthood. How uncomfortable can they be made to be in defending the killing of innocent babies in open court? I think it's about time we went to court, not on the issue of how to regulate the killing of babies, but on whether or not it's murder. And that'll be a fine exchange to be had there in court. I can't wait. Let's see. The Washington Post also says, if upheld, Mississippi Initiative 26 could open a host of sticky questions, including whether a woman with cancer would be prevented from receiving chemotherapy if it could kill her fetus. So this, the Washington Post reporters obviously got the facts, talking points from Planned Parenthood and the ACLU, and they want to bring up this heart-wrenching story of a woman who might need chemotherapy to live. But what if it could kill her fetus? Ladies and gentlemen, the object of medicine is to preserve, improve, save life. And in an effort to save one life, another life is threatened and may die. That doesn't preclude the woman from being able to choose chemotherapy or not. Because the chemotherapy would not be administered in order to kill the baby, you ignorant fools. And therefore, the woman could not be charged. Nor could her family if they encouraged her to have the chemotherapy. And besides, there's no guarantee it would kill the baby. And it's not intended to kill the baby. And what we're trying to stop here, ladies and gentlemen, is the intentional murder of innocent people. That's the only thing personhood would stop, and it would stop it cold. More from the article? Other experts, so-called, say the legal approach, personhood, could backfire, forcing the courts into making a decision unfavorable to anti-abortion activists. That concern has led to skepticism from more established anti-abortion groups, including the Eagle Forum, which opposed Colorado's personhood initiative last year, warning that, quote, its vague language would enable more mischief by judges, unquote. That's the Eagle Forum, who has sat by for a generation while innocent people have been butchered and slaughtered under their very noses. The same Eagle Forum that raised hundreds of thousands of dollars in favor of the partial birth abortion ban that turned out to be a manual on how to kill babies without violating the partial birth abortion ban. And by the way, let me remind the Eagle Forum and the Washington Post that I don't think the courts can make a decision unfavorable to anti-abortion activists. They are already killing as many children as they want to at will. It's kind of hard for it to be any worse for our side, ladies and gentlemen. And we relish the battle. We relish the battle. If you haven't made a donation to Personhood USA or Personhood Mississippi, you could actually pause this show and make a donation right now. Our message to the Personhood crew down there in Mississippi. We know you're working hard, but don't give up, because no matter what happens on election day, you will have done the right thing, and you will have educated a few people, changed a few hearts and minds, and you will have laid yet another brick on the foundation of the structure that will one day end the legalized killing of children, and that will lead to, well, dare I say it? A revival? Yes, a revival. Amen. Can I get an amen? Can I get a witness? All right, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I'm all excited about the vote coming up in Mississippi because so many people I know have poured their heart and soul and money and time and blood, sweat, and tears into the effort fighting the forces of darkness. So if you restarted the show and you made that donation, thank you very much. And pause the show and toss up a couple of prayers for Mississippi, that the Spirit of God will move upon the people and motivate them to get up off their couches, turn off their cable TV, turn off their sports, and get out there and vote yes to try to save the soul of the country. All right, now let's move on. We have, this isn't Personhood news, but it is Catholic news. And, you know, I want to excoriate the bishops there in the Catholic Church because they have not supported codifying in law the idea that it should be illegal to kill babies. They have not backed that up there. Although they do say that they believe life begins at conception and they do believe abortion is murder, they certainly not sure if they want the law to say that. Perhaps it's just a churchy thing to say that you shouldn't murder innocent people. I'm not sure if I can figure out the Catholic bishops, but I know that an awful lot of rank-and-file Catholics have worked their hearts out. People who actually know Jesus Christ have a hard time not getting involved in this movement. And as for the bishopric there, I don't know what you call it, the National Congress of Bishops, or I'm not up to date on all the Catholic lingo, but anyway, their leadership is grossly negligent in their failure to recognize a real movement. I think there's probably been some bishops out in Zuccotti Park, getting a secondhand contact high with those protesters and that, quote, movement, unquote. But I haven't seen too many of them stand up for personhood, at least not at the highest levels. But let's talk about the Catholics. It's from Reuters from Milwaukee. Roman Catholic bishops in Wisconsin are urging their parishioners not to bring weapons to church now that a new law permits state residents to carry concealed firearms. And here's what, let's see, which bishop is this? Well, this is just the bishops. I guess they hide behind being in a committee. That way they don't have to take responsibility for any of the stupid things that they say. Here's what the bishopric said there. They said, quote, intuitively, we understand that acts of violence, destruction, and murder are antithetical to the message and person of Jesus Christ and have no rightful place in our society, especially sacred places, unquote. You know, like their basilicas and all that. Those are sacred places. Might I remind the bishopric that carrying a gun into a church is not an act of violence? And other than the context, I pretty much agree with that statement. Let's see. According to the article from Reuters, machine guns, short-barreled rifles, and short-barreled shotguns do remain prohibited. Yes, the concealed carry law is only for pistols and sidearms. No short-barreled rifles, no short-barreled shotguns, no machine guns. I mean, at least for the parishioners. But criminals, they may bring their guns into church, short-barreled shotguns, short-barreled rifles, machine guns. Criminals might go ahead and bring those to church because they're criminals. And they're generally not going to follow the law. You know, the Catholic bishops might be taken more seriously if they encourage the right to do more than pray the rosary in the face of murder. I mean, if someone walks into your church with a gun intent on doing harm, perhaps even murder, it would be my hope that at least one person in the congregation would be armed. Because nothing stops a gunman like another gunman. Yeah, that's right. But it's kind of hard to take the Catholic bishops seriously when they don't support a law to stop the murder of innocent people. But they do tell their parishioners to file into church like sheep to the slaughter and don't bring a gun because I guess carrying a gun is an act of violence in the eyes of the blind guides there at the helm of the alleged world church. All right. But to all my Catholic brothers and sisters, please don't get mad at me. I still like you just fine. And I think many of you know Jesus Christ. Just got a little problem with your leadership. And by the way, the evangelical leadership is just as bad, okay? In my humble opinion. All right, now let's go to the domestic tranquility file, coming off that story of the Catholic bishops insisting we do not arm ourselves at church. Let's go to New Orleans. Revelry turned into horror during New Orleans Halloween celebrations when gunfire erupted at four scenes, leaving 15 people shot, two of whom died. The first incident occurred just after midnight. Two men began firing at one another, striking a total of eight people during the exchange. One of those shot was indeed killed. Shortly before 2 a.m., two men and two women were shot. One person in that group was killed as well. Then at 4 a.m., a third incident later left another person wounded. And around 5:30, just for good measure, a fourth shooting occurred in which two people were shot, but at last report were clinging to life at local hospitals. That's Halloween night in New Orleans. Yep, there you go. Lots of fun for the kiddos out there in the Houdat state. All right, that's just more. We got something from the justice file here, ladies and gentlemen. So we go from, the pendulum, so to say, at least at the bishopric there in Milwaukee, has swung one way. Meanwhile, the pendulum in Saudi Arabia has swung the other way. This from the Daily Mail in London. Shocking footage has surfaced of a Sudanese man being publicly beheaded in Saudi Arabia for being a sorcerer. Yeah, he's believed to have been the 44th person executed in Saudi Arabia this year and the 11th foreign nationals. The 11th foreign national who was executed there in Saudi Arabia. The Daily Mail tells us that Saudis are understood to prefer beheading by a sharp sword, as they think it more humane and quicker than electrocution or lethal injection. And this particular Sudanese individual was beheaded for the crime of sorcery there in Saudi Arabia, which the Daily Mail tells us sorcery is undefined in Saudi Arabian law. But apparently whoever chopped this guy's head off thought he had a pretty good grasp on the definition of sorcery. Abdul Hamid is understood to have been arrested in 2005 after he was entrapped by a man working for the religious police. He was asked to concoct a spell that would cause the officer's father to leave his second wife. According to the officer's account, Abdul Hamid agreed to carry out the curse in exchange for about $1,500. He was beaten after his arrest and thought to have been forced to admit to acts of sorcery and was sentenced to death and was beheaded in a parking lot, which seems hardly judicious anyway, to at least to the outside observer. Folks, Saudi Arabia is dominated by the Muslim religion, obviously. It's Mecca, Medina, the whole thing is wrapped up right there in Saudi Arabia. And the particular strain of the holy religion of peace, Islam, there in Saudi Arabia is the Wahhabi version. And, you know, every false religion is a perversion of what is right and good. The death penalty, properly administered, is right and good. But you cannot trust a bunch of bloodthirsty pagans with the death penalty because, well, they end up chopping people's heads off for undefined acts of sorcery in parking lots. And the leftist media loves to report stories like this because it plants the seeds of resentment against the death penalty in the hearts and minds of the relatively ignorant sheep that buy their newspapers and download their news articles on the web. But folks, don't read articles like that and allow them to muddy your thinking about what is right and just and good, because God wrote it on every single heart. Every conscience was engraved by God with right and wrong. And one can only be miseducated into denying one's own conscience and what is right and wrong. And, the Daily Mail, along with the other leftist media, daily working to do just that. So don't let them get to you, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, more from the Justice File? Okay, from the Ridiculous Justice File. This is from the LA Times. California's homeless sex offender parolees were rounded up and kept indoors on Halloween night under a new initiative announced under the state's annual Operation Boo crackdown. That's right, it's called Operation Boo. Sex offenders on parole are required to remain indoors from 5 p.m. on Halloween night to 5 a.m. the next day, and they're banned from turning on external lights or decorating their houses for Halloween. During the curfew, sex offender parolees may only open the door for law enforcement. And of course, that begs a question. What do we do with all the homeless sex offenders who are out there, right? That's the natural question that pops into anyone's mind. Since California is overrun with deviant, perverted sex offenders who have not been put to death, as they should have been, what do we do with them? Well, the several government cities there in California have taken a hard line on sex offenders leading up to Halloween this year, and they're basically rounding up the sex offenders and locking them up in high school gyms on Halloween night. It's ridiculous, ladies and gentlemen. You know how to prevent the molestation of children? Publicly and painfully execute the next child molester, and you'll see a dramatic decrease in the abuse of children. And we won't have to waste all our time and money with incredibly ridiculous programs like curfews and roundups of people who, upon due conviction of the capital crime of molesting a child, should have simply been put to death. Yes, the sex offender registry should be done in granite or marble. And then they're really easy to keep track of. Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. We're rounding third and headed for home. So glad to have you along on this delightful excursion into the events of the week. So good to have you with us. All right. Now, all right. Turn that off, will you? For crying out loud. That guy sounds upset. Yes, I know. I'm going to pipe that into hell for every child molester that arrives there. It will be their welcoming song. All right. Now, let's go. We've got more from the Justice File, or the Injustice File, the Ridiculous, Ludicrous Justice File, the Justice System File. From New York, this is from CBS. It's a tragedy that happens all too often. The victim of domestic violence gets a restraining order against her husband, only later to be beaten or killed when the order is ignored. So what is the solution, ladies and gentlemen? Well, technology, according to CBS, may give victims a fighting chance. Staten Island District Attorney Dan Donovan says that as of the first of the year, Staten Island will begin using GPS tracking devices to track domestic violence suspects and to enforce restraining orders. The way it works is when the person wearing the device enters an area that courts have said he cannot go, the system immediately calls the woman and warns her. The system also calls the district attorney's office. The monitoring of these devices costs about $10 a day, which will be paid for by the offender, at which point the whole Rush Limbaugh audience stood up and said, yeah, that's right, the offender should pay for that. We shouldn't pay for that. The victim will not have to pay, nor shall the taxpayers. And Sean Hannity stood up and said, yeah, that's right, we shouldn't have to pay. If the abuser cannot pay, the district attorney says he'll use existing witness protection funds. At which point, Limbaugh and Hannity just looked at each other and weren't sure if that was conservative or not, because they generally don't know what conservatism is. They should tune into this broadcast and they could find out. Let's see here. The DA says that the people who are going to be required to wear this are people who are convicted of violating an order of protection already. So you get the first strike at your ex-girlfriend free. That's right. You get the first strike is free. After that, they're going to put a GPS ankle bracelet on you, and they're going to track your movements. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a simpler solution to the problem, and that is to judiciously punish men who abuse women. If a man hits a woman, if a man abuses a woman and he's convicted, he should be duly punished with either corporal or capital punishment. And you would see a dramatic decline in the rate of domestic violence and abuse. But because our justice system has decided to tolerate it, and they've decided to tolerate it, I think partly because there's a lot of money in it. I mean, now they're going to be, who's going to make these GPS tracking devices? I wonder if it's going to be Staten Island District Attorney Don Donovan's brother-in-law's company that happens to me. That's just a speculation. We don't have any evidence for that. We don't have any evidence that that's occurring, but there is an awful lot of money being made by lawyers and judges and justice officials, the crime industry that's being promoted throughout the country. There's an awful lot of money being made, and if the level of violence were to suddenly and dramatically decrease, we'd have an awful lot of criminal justice employees who'd be out of work. And apparently that's not even open to discussion, actually solving the problems. No, we simply want to regulate the violence and profit from it, you know, where necessary. All right, let's move into the International Culture File. Warsaw, Poland. This is from the Associated Press. Dozens of rabbis from across Europe gathered in Warsaw last week for the largest meeting of Jewish religious leaders in Poland since the Polish Jewish community was virtually wiped out during World War II. Over the past 30 years, the Jewish population in Poland has grown to over 20,000. Yeah, there's over 20,000 Jews in Poland. And that's Well, let me just point this out. Before World War II, the Jewish community in Poland numbered 3.5 million people. Most were murdered in ghettos and death camps that Germany built after invading and occupying Poland back in 1939. So I pulled this article down just because I found it encouraging that rabbis were gathering in Poland. And I also wanted to just remind the audience of what happened to the Jewish community in Poland, because I think that the younger generation might just be forgetting about all this. I know there's a lot of people who say you shouldn't always be bringing up Hitler and the Jews and the Holocaust and World War II, and you shouldn't use it as an analogy for other things, but I think it needs to be brought up often so that the younger people have some idea of what happened before them. Perhaps somebody should just stand up in front of the occupiers and remind them just what happens when the system actually collapses. So that reminds me. Do I have that story here? Bank Transfer Day. Here it is, folks. Did you know that this past Saturday was Bank Transfer Day? I got this story from the AP. A grassroots movement that sprang to life last month urged bank customers to close their accounts in favor of credit unions by Saturday. They call it Bank Transfer Day, and it's caught fire with the Occupy Wall Street protests around the country. And they say they had as many as 79,000 supporters on their Facebook page as of last Friday. Well, let me say something to those 79,000 people who, by the way, have an average bank balance of about $37.50. toward the end of the month, you know, after they squander most of their government check on Netflix, cable, junk food, medical marijuana, and all that. For all you occupiers, if every one of you take your pathetic little bank account to Navy Federal Credit Union, I don't think the bankers are going to miss it, okay? I don't think there's going to be a financial tsunami on Monday when the bankers wake up and realize that the stoned-out hippies took their pennies out of their bank and put them into a credit union. But it's nice to see that you're occupying yourselves with something. Bank Transfer Day, a lot of excitement. One of my former friends actually participated. I saw it on Facebook today. Yeah. Participated in Bank Transfer Day. He said he was charged a $2 transfer fee, and he was quite upset about that. Yeah. Since that was more than he had in his bank account. Anyway, let's go to Paris. From the Associated Press, a firebombing destroyed the offices of a French satirical weekly magazine that invited the Prophet Mohammed as its guest editor in a satirical fashion, at which point the Holy Religion of Peace, participants in the Holy Religion of Peace, firebombed the building. Well, the firebombing was denounced by Muslim leaders and politicians from all sides. But behind the public show of unity was a silent fear that the spoof could trigger a wave of violent protests among Western Europe's largest Muslim population, which is in France. The director of the humorous weekly magazine that goes by the name Charb called the issue a joke and defiantly held up a copy of the paper as he stood in the rubble of his building that had been firebombed. He vowed that next week's issue would be published. He says, if we have to, we'll do it with pencils and paper, unquote. He said defiantly. So, folks, who do you think wins in the long run? Degenerate French comic writers and the governing officials who chuckle at their pornographic humor? Or a devout, fanatical pagan youth willing to kill in order to obtain eternal glory and cleanse the nation and achieve the caliphate? Who do you think wins? My money is not on the French. Yeah. Oh, we have here. Not unless they change their ways. I mean, they need to look back to Constantine. Probably how far they have to go back to find a Frenchman worth his salt. But we have a quote here from Mohamed Moussaoui, the head of the French Council for the Muslim Faith. He said his organization deplores, quote, the very mocking tone of the paper toward Islam and toward the Holy Prophet, but we reaffirm with force our opposition to all acts and all forms of violence, unquote. You notice how the Muslims always slip that in? Well, they're against what happened here, but we're also against all acts and all forms of violence. And if you get down to their definitions, it's kind of like sorcery. It's not really defined, but writing a comic about Mohammed is, well, that's an act of violence. That's a form of violence. And while the Muslims may not define it perfectly in their law books, they will chop your head off for it, and they will burn your building down. All right. Now, here's an uplifting story. And I downloaded this just for its uplifting, the feeling of upliftedness it brought to me. It's a story from ABC about Toyota Motor Company. Let's see. Eiichi Saito, a professor in rehabilitative medicine, demonstrated Toyota's new walk assist device last week, strapping on the computerized metallic brace onto his right leg, which was paralyzed by polio. The brace could bend at the knee as needed, allowing him to walk more naturally and rise from a chair with greater ease than the walker he now uses. Wearing a backpack-like battery, Saito walked up and down flights of stairs, smiling with delight. That's just a great story. I mean, way to go, Toyota. It's really cool. But the article goes on. But the era of an aging society is definitely coming, according to scientists and engineers who are working on these things. They say they need to partner with robots to enrich our lives. Yeah, I'm all for that. I dig robots. Bring on the robots. I'm cool with the robots. Toyota officials said the technology for autos such as sensors, motors, and computers are being used in such computerized gadgets to help people get around. And what they learn about mobility for people will likely be used in future cars. Toyota faces competition from other manufacturers that are all working on gadgets to tap into the healthcare business. Yeah. So you notice, folks, those portions of Asia we had the wherewithal to liberate are flourishing. They're even inspirational, you know? And in fact, they've inspired the tyrants in China to at least try a modicum of liberty. But the Chinese tyrants mostly just steal the ideas, even from Toyota. All right. A final word, ladies and gentlemen, from John Carney, Jack Carney. What is Barry Ho's press secretary's name? Jim Carney? Biff Carney? Skip? Is it Skip Carney? Anyway, here's what Skip Carney said when asked about Barack Obama's assertion that God wants Congress to pass his jobs bill. Carney said, quote, "We believe the phrase from the Bible is, quote, the Lord helps those who help themselves. And I think the point the president is making is that we have it within our capacity to do the things to help the American people," unquote. That's Biff Skip Carney. The White House added a note in the official transcript of Mr. Carney's address, and a footnote said, quote, "This common phrase does not appear in the Bible." Yeah. The Lord helps those who help themselves is not in the Bible. I think it's Ben Franklin, as a matter of fact. I'd have to research that. But surprise of all surprises, Barry Ho's press secretary doesn't have a clue as to what's in the Bible and what's not in the Bible. And that's really, really part of the problem, ladies and gentlemen. But it's a problem you can help fix if you will simply seek the truth and seek the living God and don't be afraid. But when the enemy stands up against you with lies and distortions and murder, because you are the embodiment of the living God on the planet, and we need all the help we can get from you and from me and from all of us. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. That's KGOV.com, the original podcast on the internet. I want to thank my friends at Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, and of course, as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studios. I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.